Now, if I put Michael Hitchborn in, I wonder what kind of score he would get. Have you been to MyLife.com, Michael?
I actually just went to the website and put my name in, so I'm looking.
Did you see a preview of what your score was when you first started entering the info? Because I saw it briefly.
Yeah, my score was like 3.47 out of 5.
Darn it! You're higher rated than I am.
Yeah, well, I'm more likable than you are.
Oh, Johnny! This may be true. This may be true. So, you know, MyLife.com ought to make a $1,000 donation to the chivalry and broadcasting nonprofit that we just started last week for bringing them hundreds of people that are going to go and check their scores today.
Yeah, right.
Hey, how did we get all this business today? Where's all this coming from? This really is, though. I mean, this is the logical. You would expect that this would ultimately be the outcome that, as was said in the Spider-Man movie, with great power comes great responsibility. Well, the people that have great power are not very responsible, and they are not restrained by any sense of old world standards against scandal and against all that scandal can bring. And so they've created these vast empires using social media. And then, as we see now, social media can now be used to all of our detriment to go and obtain life rating scores on us. Now, I would think that in a sane world, because you have 6 children right now, that, you know, that if you had a lot of kids, that would elevate your ranking. You know, what a great citizen you are, repopulating the earth, providing the next, you know, out there, making sure there's a next generation. But in this sick, twisted world in which we live, anything over 2.5, you probably get penalized.
I wouldn't doubt it. Certainly in China, that's the case.
True. Right, right. And the Chinese apparently are well aware of the things that the communist government wants them to do in order to keep their scores where they want them, and they do them. But there's no thought control in communist governments, our libtard friends tell us. Nothing to see here, citizen. This is like something out of a movie, man.
Well, that actually falls in line with the common question. Does life imitate art, or does art imitate life? And I think that science fiction has always been kind of a social prophet for the current in culture. So, yeah, the reason that we saw this stuff in science fiction is because some of these writers and thinkers saw this kind of thing coming earlier on.
You know, my friend David Simpson has a theory about science fiction. And that is that the really good science fiction writers are not actually writing fiction. They're writing what they hope happens.
Well, that was certainly the case with H.G. Wells. He was a socialist.
And I think the ones that are writing dystopian futures, that they actually hope and pray. Well, they don't pray, but they actually hope for the dystopian future that they write about. The ones that are that write about the dystopian futures where there's been a nuclear Armageddon or whatever, actually hope that, well, that'll teach the world to get rid of nuclear bombs, detonate them all. Yeah, what a great idea!
Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
That's right. Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. This slave new world here, though, can exercise and is exercising so much power and authority over so many people's lives. It's really shocking because if you were to sit down and think about it, Mitter Church, how are they exercising power? Well, because they're causing people to do things that they would not otherwise do, especially when it comes to things that are personal. You know, I've told the story about things that have happened in my own little neighborhood that had been totally brought about by the existence and the abuse of Pride Book, of Facebook. You know, we got neighbors out there posting screen caps from their surveillance cameras of who's driving by their house at what speed. This never would have happened before. You know, if you had a real concern about it, what would you have done if you had kids in the neighborhood? You as a dad. And you kept seeing this guy pre-social media, and you kept seeing this guy doing 30 miles an hour in your little 20-mile-an-hour suburb. What would you do?
I don't know.
You go, next time you saw him coming, you'd go stand out in the middle of the road, hold your hand up, and stop him. And you'd say, stop speeding through this neighborhood. There are children here, including mine.
Well, the other thought was to throw a bunch of nails across the road and let him let him see the consequences.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's just...
You could do what do they call that thing? The portable treadle. You throw the portable...
Yeah,
the portable treadle out across the road that the cops have.
Mm-hmm.
And, with all the spikes in it, and it's weighted so that they stick straight up, and you drive over and you pop all your tires, right? Well, you could have done that. This was all...
That's just the devious, vindictive part of my mind that, tries to think of these kinds of things.
Well, I'm going to give you one more thing to think about before we get into a subject that's on your Facebook wall today. Did you know that very recently, we're not sure of the exact date, but we were made aware of it this morning. Did you know that Amazon Prime is now showing the film I, Pedophile?
What? No, I hadn't heard that.
Yep. You can now rent or stream in your Amazon Prime account the movie I, Pedophile, which is an emphatic and up-close look at the pedophile to show that they're not really criminals and that they are just misunderstood, as the trailer.
I'm sorry, I'm at a loss for words. This is I'm gabs. I can't even speak.
You're gobsmacked.
That's it.
By the way, the term gobsmacked has made its way back into our vocabulary because there's so many things that people can't believe are actually happening that the only way to describe them is go like, I guess I'm gobsmacked. That's G-O-B smacked, by the way, not G-O-D gobsmacked. I shouldn't be surprised. Netflix has had the kiddie porn, Big Mouth, for it's in its second season now, maybe its third. HBO has the third season. HBO has the teenage porn series, drug use and porn series called Euphoria. They have this ridiculous show that purports to show what you and I and other patriarch clingers want in this thing called The Handmaid's Tale. So we have all these dystopian, sometimes illegal and pornographic things that are being filmed and shoved down and served up on platters for people to consume. The really disturbing thing is that there's people to consume them.
I remember back in 95, there was a movie called Kids. Do you remember this movie?
What was it called?
Kids.
Kids.
Just Kids, yeah. So... I remember there was a huge to-do about this movie because it centered around a bunch of, early, like the tweens, 12, 13-year-olds, doing drugs, getting drunk, having sex with each other. And most of America at that time was really upset about what this movie was all about and how it was promoting this kind of horrible lifestyle amongst really young kids. And now we have entire series that are based on this very thing.
Yep. Well, and then now you also have the I saw a headline yesterday that the sex robot makers say that AI will be available within the next year that will make take home robot sex dolls more more intimate than actual real humans. I'm like going like, okay, that's a great average, and thanks a lot, Drudge, for promoting that. But how is that even possible? And yet, the sex robot manufacturers, no one has passed a law yet saying that, you know, we have laws against humans having relations with animals, humans of adults having relations with children. It would just be a simple act to have a law that in your state, it would be an act, a crime against nature, if you were sodomizing a humanoid or a human resembling piece of assembled silicone and steel. Now, I don't see what the big deal is. Who would oppose such a law other than the perverts that want to have the robots?
You know, it's ironic that they would use the word intimate, because the word intimate, it directly infers a relationship. In other words, it's not just one receiving from another. It is a mutual giving. That's what intimacy means. But you cannot have a mutual giving with an object. The object can't give anything to you. It also can't receive anything from you. It just is. So you can't have intimacy with a robot that is simulating intimacy. So it basically becomes a more sophisticated form of masturbation.
That's an interesting way to put that. So the robot just has human-like features, but it's the same thing as the... Well, I can't even describe what it is, but... self-gratification implements, shall we say, that have been on the market for, I guess, centuries, probably. Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing. Today also is the day, is the feast day, and we can talk a little bit about this, of St. Bernard of Clairvaux, which I have a passage from one of his sermons where he gives the real meaning of life for men. And I'm going to read it to the audience, because the real meaning of life for men is not what you think. And only Bernard of Clairvaux could have cut through all of what was going on around him to actually get right down to the nitty-gritty of it and then put it in such flourishing words. So we'll do that. But I wanted to talk to you about what's on your Facebook wall today, Mr. Hitchburn.
Absolutely. Yesterday. So it all started yesterday when I posted a comparative picture of a mitre worn by Pope Francis that looked basically like a Dixie cup, and a mitre worn by Pope Benedict that displayed the glory and grandeur of one of the tenets of the faith, which is the veneration of Our Lady.
Okay.
So when I compared the two, all I pointed out was the stark contrast of what we have now with what we used to have. And, of course, it started a big debate amongst a lot of people, you know, saying, oh, how can you say that Pope Francis is any different than Pope Benedict, when Pope Benedict had similar mitres, and he also supported a lot of these, you know, post-conciliar changes and blah, 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 blah. And I said, look, I'm not comparing the two men. I'm comparing with what is currently with what was. And the individuals wearing the mitres is almost immaterial to the contrast of the mitres themselves. So a lot of people misunderstood. And I kept going back and forth with some individuals, and at one point I kind of just went on a tear about what was really bothering me. And it caused me to sit and think a little bit more deeply about what I was really upset about. And so I wound up posting, taking some of the commentary that I'd made in my reply, and I just posted it. And since your listeners are actually listening, and we are on radio rather than on Facebook.
Right, you could do this live.
I can do this live. And so I can actually, if you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and read what I wrote.
Well, I just want to go over quickly that Miss O'Connell, my wonderful producer there in the other room, who was not freaky or disgusting, has posted a photograph of the beautiful miter that Benedict wore that has the Blessed Virgin Mary surrounded by a crown of 12 stars above her head, and at her feet a pair of angels on his miter. And then the ugly Irish Family Day miter that Papa Francis wore, that it looks like he might be an alien with green, gold, and maroon antennae sticking out from his forehead. Is that what you're referring to?
Absolutely. That is exactly what I'm referring to.
The one on Pope Francis, on the current Holy Father, it looks like out of a sci-fi movie. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even look like a miter. It looks like they made it out of some cardboard and just slapped some white linen over top of it or something. And then took a mark. So I went, you got a green one? Yeah, green will be good.
You know, one of the comments that I made to somebody was that it resembled a paper-folded party hat that kids would wear at a birthday party.
Reminds me of the line from Airplane. What do you make of it? I can make a hat. I can make a boat. I can make a...
Right.
Lloyd Bridges would be sitting there with a piece of tabloid-sized paper and folding it. Okay. So
in relation to this and in regard to this, I wrote the following. I said, there is a lot of anger and deep concern, rightly so, in the church right now regarding Pope Francis. But we have to keep perspective. Pope Francis is the logical outcome of the sweeping changes made in the name of the Second Vatican Council. What he is doing now is the fulfillment of the vision of the council expert advisors, what they had for the church in the 1960s.
Sure.
I'm going to be completely candid here. I'm repeating something that I had said earlier, but it bears repeating. Before I begin, I think I need to make perfectly clear, there comes a time when it is right and just to hate a thing. Scripture tells us that God hates sin. Doctors and patients are right to hate cancer and other terrible ailments. We have an obligation to hate laws which pervert the definition of marriage and permit the murder of children. Hatred in these instances is a good thing. And it is in this sense that I must say that I absolutely hate what Vatican II has done to the church. I hate what it has done to the liturgy. I hate what it has done to morality. And I hate what it has done to the faith. In the name of Vatican II, the Mass has become a Protestant prayer service with a valid consecration. In the name of Vatican II, ecumenism has become the buzzword for indifferentism and syncretism. In the name of Vatican II, our beautiful churches have been turned into whitewashed meeting halls. In the name of Vatican II, priestly vestments have become slightly more ornate choir robes. In the name of Vatican II, the charitable works of the church have been transformed into lucrative industries. In the name of Vatican II, tolerance and acceptance was made the entry point for the embrace of sins that cry to heaven for vengeance. In the name of Vatican II, the kingship of Christ has been abandoned for the tyranny of humanism. I hate and despise every single one of those things that has happened to my beautiful church. Having been born in 1975, I was robbed of my birthright. The best thing that could ever happen to the church would be for a subsequent pope to burn and ban everything written by Congar, De Lubac, von Balthasar, Kuhn, Rahner, John Courtney Murray, Theodore Desjardins, and every other modern mind that has contributed to our current darkness. This pope, who I refer to, some future pope, should also convene a council to correct the ambiguities and errors that have arisen from Vatican II, including the complete abrogation of the Novus Ordo Missae. When we look upon the plain and empty trappings of the modern church, we witness the stripping of Christ before his crucifixion all over again. And even then, we hardly have an understanding of what we've truly lost. It is time to regain what has been stolen from us, our liturgy, our faith, and the glory of the church.
There you go. The audience approves.
Glad to hear it.
Well, next time you got to, come on. Tell us what you really think next time.
Well, you know, I do tend to beat around the bush and mince words a bit.
Well, now, I will say to you that I concur in most of your complaints. I could probably add a half a dozen or so.
I'm sure.
I could probably go, and another thing. Stop making these impressionistic stations of the cross. It's not that hard to draw our Lord carrying a cross down a street. You know, but they have these. I don't even know what they are. I saw one and went, what is that? It doesn't even look like humans in the thing. so there's other things that they have done. The uglying up of the altars. Now, it's not just the buildings but the whitewashed walls. What about all the stuff that's inside the buildings? You know, you get a with the geezers that went after the priest that was sent in by Bishop Sample in Portland, Oregon, to try to turn this what once was a Catholic church back into a Catholic church. You get that that feeling, or you get that sense that these are a bunch of guilt-ridden people. That when it is called into, when their error or when what they have actually done is shown to them, that you can do one of two things. You can double down, a la Abby Johnson yesterday, and running every traditional Catholic on earth away from her and her apostolate, or you can say, okay, I see your point. Yeah, let me think about this, but I see your point. I'm sorry I misunderstood. This is where I think we are. Most people, and this shouldn't surprise us, completely lack humility in this, Michael. And they're not going to admit their mistake, because then that would be admitting the mistake. And you'd be saying that what? Are you saying that I'm responsible for all those lower level of hell souls that have been lost? Here, let me give you a good example. The National Review, the allegedly conservative magazine stalwart, right? The National Review and Fox News have something in common in the last 2 weeks. They are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. Have you seen either one of these?
No.
Well, you haven't missed anything. But in celebrating the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and people are remembering, you know, the big freak concert and all that. They're remembering the fact that they tried to reenactment, and with 50 years of their hippie-laced error, they couldn't get enough people to go and play for free. So they basically had to cancel the reunion concert or whatever. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen any of that. I have been more focused on my research, so my attention span with regard to insipid news really kind of falls to the wayside from time to time.
Well, I only bring it up because these are the same people that went to Woodstock. These are the same ones that smashed the altar rails. These are the same one on their quasi-Catholic acid trips that dreamed up these hideous vestments and all these other perversions that they visited upon the beautiful visage, the beautiful physical parts of Catholicism and of the Catholic Church. I think that that's really what most people have in resentment today. When somebody is resentful towards the church, I don't think immediately that they're actually resentful towards what you and I know Catholicism to be, you know, the deposit of faith and all that. I think that they're resentful for the for what they see the modern, ridiculous, the parody of Catholicism that is. And it is in many instances. I'm sorry to say I agree with you, Mr. Hitchburn. It is a parody. It's almost like it's a satire of the real faith.
It is. It is. And we see more and more satires popping up all over the place. Here's the thing, and this is one of the things that I love about C.S. Lewis, is that he in his book, The Final Battle, which is the last of the Narnia series, he describes an ape who takes a donkey and throws a dead lion's mane over this donkey and goes around telling everybody that this is Aslan,
right,
that Aslan's returned. And this ape is going around parroting or putting a twisted viewpoint on what Aslan had said, done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact of the matter is, this is a great illustration of the fact that the devil can't create something new. He can only imitate what already is. He imitates and perverts, and he's done it since the beginning. So all of these parodies of the truth, the parodies of the reality of the teachings of the church and everything else that are being put on display. I mean, what is same-sex marriage but a twisted aping of real marriage, authentic marriage?
Sure.
So, yes, the devil is parodying, aping, creating facsimiles of the truth. And that's what people are flocking to. Because they don't really know and understand the truth.
And as my friend Joseph Pierce says today, where's he? He writes at the Imaginative Conservative magazine about true education. We can't have real education unless education aims to teach the truth. And the only way that you can get to a teaching of the truth is if you're going to teach that, as Pilate was asked the question, of our Lord, quod est veritas, right?
Exactly. What is truth?
What is truth? And, of course, our Pilate says, quod est veritas. And our Lord says, eum veritatum, or something. I forget the exact Latin verbiage. I am the truth. I am the way. I am the life. That this holds true in education. You know, and I don't think that people are aware enough of the fact that it doesn't matter what your stupid field of endeavor is, folks. It doesn't matter if it's literary. It doesn't matter if it's carpentry. It doesn't matter if it's mathematics. It doesn't matter if it's broadcasting. It doesn't matter what your vocation is, or what your field is, or what your study is, or what your expertise is. It doesn't matter. There is a truth that guides and must control each and every single one of those activities. And there are no exceptions. Now, if you just teach that, my, what an education you would start your kids off, or what a great start you would give your children, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the thing is, everybody today, the world today, and this is part of the reason that I went on the tear that I did. We are all currently left to our own devices because of the changes of Vatican II to try and find what the truth is. We've been put into this fog. There's so much confusion now over questions regarding morality and questions regarding theological truths. And what do we get from the top? we get Pope Francis saying, well, there are pastoral approaches to certain truths that allow for the practice of certain things that we call evil only because it's a difficult situation or it's impossible for them to follow what Christ teaches. Well, let's go back to what Christ taught. When he said that unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will have no life within you, he lost the majority of his followers. And when he asked his disciples, will you leave also? They said, Lord, what you say is hard. It's hard. And the fact of the matter is our faith is hard because it is fixed. There is no other truth. There is only that which is. There is only that which our Lord teaches. And if we stop beating around the bush, we could actually see, yes, there is only one truth. And if we want salvation, we had better start paying attention to what our Lord said and stop trying to find modern answers to these hard truths.
Now, I would just clarify that by saying one thing, that when Michael says modern answer, by the way, it's Michael Hitchborn, the founder and president of the Lepanto Institute. You should go to his website, sign up for his email newsletter, and you can also take part in his very candid and very private Friday afternoon video conferences. Simply go to Lepanto, L-E-P-A-N-T-O-I-N, that's Lepanto Institute, abbreviated, lepantoin.com, and you can sign up today. When Michael says modern answers, he doesn't mean that we can't have an answer in the modern world. What he means is it doesn't have to be a novelty, and it doesn't have to be so that it satisfies what modernists or what people that are consider themselves modern, that it necessarily comports with what they desire. You know, yesterday I had Tim Gordon, author of Catholic Republic, why America will fail without Rome. And his brother, and this was over a kerfluffle that was started on Twitter. One mistake, and we'll kill you. Well, it was started on Twitter over an interview that Tim had given where he had been asked a question about what a woman's proper role was in a Catholic household. And he gave the right answer. He gave the catechetical tradition answer. Well, to have children, raise the children in the home and keep the home while the husband's out doing what the husband does to provide. And nothing happened when he said it to the interviewer, but when the interview finally got published last 2 days ago, all Hades broke loose because all your modernist, neo-Catholic feminist babes all went neo-Catholic feminist, went, you're not sticking me back in the kitchen, Buster. You, that's not the way the modern church interprets that. That teaching has been gone now. It's been revised, and it's been for all of our good. And Tim Gordon and his wife, Steph, to their credit, went, no, it hasn't been revised. Where did you get that at? And then they cite some obscure lines from, again, where do you think they got it's been revised from? I'll give you two guesses, and the first one doesn't count. Let me rephrase that, Michael. Who do you think they got it from?
No guesses. I'll let you go ahead and answer.
He's a very recent saint. What's the source of almost all modern interpretation errors that we are currently dealing with today? Something that St. John Paul II wrote or said. Almost in every flipping instance, it's almost always something St. John Paul II. And in this instance, it's something that was in you're familiar with the encyclical Familiaris Consortium, I think?
Yes.
Okay, I probably just mispronounced that. But
no, you pronounced it right.
Okay. So, see, my Latin is getting better. so is my memory of Latin. So something in Familiaritas Consortium said something to the effect of, well, modern women can't be denied this and any other. Now, I went and read it. I went, that does not say anything about not being responsible, not being in charge of domestic things in a home. It says that there are modern associations that are available to modern women, and if they want to have access, that they should have the right to have access to them. That's the way I read it. Didn't say anything about the Patricia Ireland definition of feminism ported so that it fits modern Catholic women. But there it is right there. So almost every single inch. It's like with the death penalty. Why are we stuck today with this new interpretation that the Catholic Church is now opposed to the death penalty? The Catholic Church cannot be opposed to the death penalty. She can't.
Right.
It's as simple as that. where did they get that from? They got it from St. Pope John Paul II. Which they're not supposed to say that. If you say that, well, then, you know, you're one of these modernists. You're one of these fossilized wackos that wants to live in the 13th century without running water. So, there's that. Now, let me tantalize you with the details of the sex robot. You called it right. Here's the headline. Sex robots with full AI hit market capable of replacing human intimacy. And let's go back to the Hitchburn rule. Can a robot or a cyborg or whatever replace human intimacy?
No.
And given the reason earlier, can you just recap why a robot cannot replace human intimacy?
Because the definition of intimacy means reciprocation. A robot cannot receive or give anything. It simply is a machine that exists. And so all of the quote-unquote intimacy, it's not intimacy. It's actually just it's masturbation. It's self-fulfillment. All of that is done by the individual who is involved with the robot. And I'm picking my words carefully because the whole idea is absolutely disgusting. But you can't have intimacy with something that cannot be intimate. It does not have thought. It does not have feeling. It's just like the Terminator, you know? It doesn't care. It doesn't have compassion, it doesn't think, and it will not stop until you are dead. And there you go.
It is like the Terminator. There's some more details on this, and by the way, just for clarification.
It can't be bargained with, it can't be reasoned with, it doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop, ever, until you are dead.
Now, Mike Churchill here on the Crusade Channel. We're in overtime now here at 844-527-8723. We'll call it the OT, the King Dude OT. Here's another headline in the same story. Now, we talked about Netflix earlier in the kiddie porn show Big Mouth. You ready? Are you sitting down?
I always sit down when I'm interviewing with you.
Ah, okay. Folks, if you're out there, if you're not seated, sit down. If you're driving, pull over. There you go. Here's a headline. Sex robot demand soars for Whitney Cummings dolls after Netflix hit. Demand for sex robots that look like Whitney Cummings has soared after the comedian had a doll made to look like her for a Netflix show. Now, this is...
What do you...
Now, again, people that say, come on, Mike, it's just entertainment. Yeah, you don't have to watch it if you don't want to. What's the big deal? Now, you asked a question earlier. Is art imitating life or is life imitating art?
In this case, I think it's reciprocal.
So you have now a TV series on Netflix where they're filming things. This woman is filming. I don't even know who Whitney Cummings is. But she had a sex robot, I guess a doll made for the TV show. Netflix is out there promoting it. And now the perverts of the world, who will never actually meet the real in the flesh Whitney Cummings, don't desire to actually have, you know, make her a wife and have children, do what God says you should do, only want the one thing from her that the modern world has taught them that women are good for. You know, I keep wondering, when are the angry, ugly women we used to call feminists, when are they going to, you know, get the memo here and see what they have unleashed? That they have unleashed, and the modern world's been only too happy to take advantage of and profit from it. They have unleashed the total objectification of the female in her form, in what she is capable of doing or performing when it comes to sex functions, and not much else. I mean, if you're the parent of daughters, as I am, I have grave concerns. Are there any boys out there that have escaped this madness that could even be a candidate for my daughters at 22 years old now to be a husband?
Where are the feminists screeching now, saying that men are objectifying women and not liking them or loving them for their minds?
Right.
You know, they used to. You know, I remember back in the 90s, women used to be so upset that men would be looking at their chests, or that men would be, and of course, you know, this is at the same time that women are wearing sultry clothing. So, you know, how dare you look at something that I'm trying to show you through my clothing? It's like,
right.
But where are the women screeching now? Because in this very instance, what we have are men desiring mindless women facsimiles. We don't want the woman's mind. We want the body, and that's it. I mean, at this point, we might as well legalize necrophilia.
Why not? We're on the way to legalizing pedophilia. Why not necrophilia? And why are you being such a prude, Hitchburn? What's wrong with having sex with dead people?
Well, I mean, what's wrong with having sex with a robot? You know, it's... At what point do you draw the line? And at what point do we say that intimacy actually involves two persons, and two persons have a desire to give themselves whole and complete in an act which is designed for the generation of children?
Now,
that is the real definition of intimacy, but we're not living that. And it all goes back to the allowance of divorce and the permission and the permitted use of contraception. If you want to understand the world today, you have to take it all the way back to divorce and contraception.
No, I agree. And Brother Andre Marie even says on one of his episodes of Reconquest that you can campaign all you want against abortion. If you're not going to go after contraception, he doesn't say peeing in the wind. I'll say peeing in the wind. You're spitting into the wind. How about that? You're spitting into the wind. It's going to come right back and hit you in the face. You'll get nothing accomplished. Absolutely nothing. Now, here is, I don't know enough about this entity, but I've gotten hate mail from female listeners when I've mentioned TED Talks before. And I've said, you don't know what you're talking about. You sit up there with your stupid King Dude radio show, and you don't know that TED Talks provides a lot of good information. I don't care. They provide an entire encyclopedia filled with information. If they provide this clip, then I don't want anything to do with them. Here, listen. This is a TED Talk.
Working out whether or not we can make them. We've had centuries of dreaming about the perfect artificial companion, but we're really only at the start, working out whether or not we can make them. If it sounds like I'm here to advocate for the sex robots, that's not quite true. I have my concerns as well. But as a scientist, I want to see an evidence-based approach. I don't think we can make moral knee-jerk reactions.
Yes, we can.
The sex robot market is small. In its current form, I don't think it will grow. I think we can do better than that.
You're doing a good job of helping it.
We're going to have to learn to live in a world that contains robots in many different forms, and we'll have to adapt to that.
Stop the digital
bit
media
by
file.
Bit, robots will come into our lives, and we'll adapt to it.
I do not have to live in a world where I am surrounded by the Terminator. Do you?
No. No, certainly not.
This is what the philosophers call will to power here. They are trying to manufacture this into existence by saying that we're going to have to do it. No, if human progress and flourishing requires robots, well, then I'm sorry. I must have the wrong God.
Well, you don't worship at the feet of the robot, so there is that. You also don't worship at the feet of the God of sex, either.
Well, but this whole thing, we're going to have to live with the robots. So let's get used to you living with the robots. And the sex robots are going to be a part of it. Take your fake Irish brogue accent, sweetheart, and go jump off the cliffs of Dover. I don't, and neither do you. We do not have to live in a world with more machines in it. I'm so sick and tired of being told that I have to have more gadgetry. I don't like most of the gadgetry I already have. And I'm tired of updating it. What's that?
I, for one, welcome our new machinist overlords.
You want the new machinist overlords?
You know, you look at the people that have turned to machinery, and it's science fiction all over again, right? How many times has science fiction told us that we're going to have mechanical overlords, and we're going to have AI, and, you know, the paranoia? Have you ever seen the movie The Thing?
Sure.
Okay, so The Thing.
Now, which one?
The one from 1982, John Carpenter.
Okay, so Kurt Russell's Thing, the best one ever.
Yes. Now, that movie is not about an alien. A lot of people say that it's about an alien. It is not. It is about what happens to the human condition in a state of paranoia. And if you understand what paranoia is and how society creates paranoia through suspicion, and that's, this all goes back to your whole social rating scores.
Mm-hmm.
You have people rating each other and looking at each other and scrutinizing each other and coming up with their own judgment. Then they start rating each other and they make their own decisions based on what they think about you. The whole movie, The Thing, is all about paranoia. And if you want to understand what's going to happen in a society that's based on these kinds of rating systems, that's the movie to watch.
So that's our movie of the week then, The Thing.
I don't recommend it for anybody under the age of 25. It's gory and it's got a lot of bad language. But in terms of the psychological impact of paranoia on a culture, that it definitely explains in a very succinct manner what we have to look forward to.
Yeah, and the one guy that they're the most paranoid about, they do kick him out of their society. And it's never really quite resolved whether or not he digs the ginormous pit underneath the external room that they lock him in, or whether or not the other guy, when he's sneaking off, helps the thing dig the pit. But, I saw that movie in the theater in 1982 when it came out. And I was scared of the bejesus belt. The thing could come out of anywhere, and you know, because it could mask itself, it could make itself into anything. And by the by, it's also a cautionary tale about attachments to the appearance of physical things, because the thing looked just like the dog. The thing looked just like the, you know, the guy that it took over, right? The thing looked like it could mimic, you know, there was a lot of, you know, that's when Carpenter was at the top of his game. There was a lot of foreshadowing in there. By the by, did you know that he got that story from a 1958 film starring James Arness?
Yeah, well, the 1958 film didn't resemble what he came up with at all.
No, no, not at all. But he did take the title, The Thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yes, Marshall Matt Dillon was the Thing in the 1958 version.
I didn't realize that that's who was the man behind the mask.
Pretty sure that James Arness was the Thing. You know, James Arness was a tall dude. He was like 6'4", 6'5". So he played the Thing. Interesting talk here today. Very good. I don't know if you saw this, finally. Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute with our weekly visit. Visit his website, sign up for his email list today, lepantoin.org. Vatican panel to study alleged miracle. The Diocese of Little Rock, Arkansas, has submitted formal documentation to the Congregation for the Causes of Saints in Rome regarding an alleged miraculous healing of a college student from a serious medical condition, which the Vatican panel may review as part of the beatification cause of Venerable Henriette Delisle, foundress of the Sisters of the Holy Family in pre-Civil War New Orleans. I don't know if you're familiar with Henriette Delisle, but I visited her tomb just two Saturdays ago, and the Sisters of the Holy Family, you know, were formed for the care of Black women and for the care of the many, many children as well that were born of what were then called concubinage. You ever heard of it?
Not at all, no.
It's basically the process whereby French kings and others, and then in this instance, wealthy Southerners, kept a harem of young girls and concubines. And when they went, when they were out visiting, whenever they left their plantation, they would stay with the concubines, and they'd have relations with them. And if any children were produced, they were, you know, tossed out or given up for adoption or whatever. They were almost always taken from their mothers. Henriette Delisle, through her courageous efforts, basically put an end to the American version of concubinage, I believe is what it was called. So, and she's already venerable, but she started this order that's still there today called the Sisters of the Holy Family, and it's quite it's quite lovely. So, just wanted to mention that. Anything else to add, Mr. Hitchburn?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have covered a lot of ground today. You can read Michael's Facebook post. You'd have to, be following you on Facebook, Michael Hitchburn. And it was published, early this morning?
Last night, yeah.
Okay. Which says 11 hours, so a little after bedtime last night. And you can read it begins with, there is a lot of anger and deep concern. Lots of people have already seen it. So you can check that out on his Facebook wall. And, of course, you can always visit the we have archives, year and a half worth of weekly interviews with Mr. Hitchburn here on the Crusade Channel and the Mike Church Show. By the by, are you following this Amazonian synod turkey that they're getting ready to get to start?
Yeah, I've been paying attention to what's coming, and I saw early this morning or late last night that there was something posted most recently about the how the synod really is going to be about paganism and the acceptance of paganism in the church.
I don't know what makes any of these clowns think that they're going to get away with any of this, that the Holy Ghost is actually going to allow them to get away with any of this. But this novelty that they're introducing, I mean, this is out of, as a matter of fact, I'll go out on a limb here. Dan Brown couldn't write this novelty himself. It's so ridiculous.
Yep. I don't know what to add to that. The craziness in the church has reached a boiling point.
Well, like you said in your post, this is the logical result of this.
Yep.
You're gonna have a Cardinal Casper. You know what? And you're going to have all these dutiful Catholics that are going to practice a fake and, I think, heretical form of clericalism, and are going to follow this. And they're going to go like, well, I guess, you know, the Holy Father said it. We got to do it.
Yeah. So I believe one of the prophecies of Our Lady said that the church will become unrecognizable. And boy, is that being fulfilled in spades now.
Well, let me just tell you, we were commenting about this weekend, Sunday. A little Latin Mass society that started here with weekly rosary and fasting days. It took 10 years to actually get the bishop to say, okay, you can have your stupid Latin Mass, but you can only have it in the middle of nowhere at noon on Sundays. That was in 2009. One decade later, and now 4 years in an actual parish where we were taken in to Our Lady, I'm sorry, St. Jane Francis de Chantal in Abita Springs, coming up on a four-year anniversary of having been taken in, now with the implementation and the development of a beautiful children's choir and a choir director. You had the polyphony, the beautiful music, and the chant, the smells and the bells and all that. People here in our area are finding out about it. And people that, you know, are going to this beautiful, noon, extraordinary high mass every Sunday are going back and telling others, going like, man, you got to leave your wherever it is you're going. You got to come with me one Sunday, and you got to see this. You have to see it. My view of that is, and look, they may be able to get rid of it tomorrow morning. I don't know. The bishop may have a change of heart or whatever. I don't know what the future holds. But they didn't kill, thanks to Marcel Lefebvre. That's right, I said it. Thanks to Bishop Lefebvre. They didn't kill the Latin Mass. They had it on the ground. They had it in a chokehold. They were going to stick a dagger in it and murder it. And they misfired. They missed. The dagger didn't hit the heart, Michael. It just missed it.
That's right.
And so, ultimately, I think your abrogation is going to occur, whether they like it or not. So, let the novelties run their course, which is all you can do. Worry about yourself and your family, like Brother Francis says.
The fever will break eventually.
It will. It will. In the meantime, the beauty is out there, and you can always find it. All right, brother. Well, God bless you. How's Alyssa?
She's doing great.
Okay.
She's doing great.
Fantastic. Glad to hear it. Y'all keep praying for Michael's wife. Pregnancy or for child number 7, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, and by the by, I'll talk to you about it on another time. We're out of time. Thank you for the time, brother, as always.
All right. Thank you. God bless you and God bless your audience.